Next presenter is Mark Dittman. He's the ELR Project Manager for Pennsylvania Department of Health and the Rhapsody Developer for Case Notification and Meaningful Use, so extra things to ask him about.
Thank you all for staying. As Jay said, I'm also the Rhapsody Developer for the Meaningful Use, or for Case Notification. I'm also the primary contact for Meaningful Use inquiries about the ELR components. Among other things, I do supervise the one staff person that is our IT support for our State Bureau of Laboratories. In Pennsylvania, we have a unique situation where we actually are the IT support for the Bureau of Labs, even though they are remote, about 90 miles from us. And what else have I done? Environmental Public Health Tracking IT manager for quite a while, too, until just this past April. So it's been a lot of interesting and kind of similar work. I do have to say one thing. If you're going to be on a presentation panel with anyone from New York State, go first. Because they're like presentation kryptonite. So we have a lot of long-running inside jokes about David in New York State, and mainly from feedback from our labs, and I'll address some of that as well here. Essentially, PA ELR was going live around 2003, and it started out primarily receiving blood lead reporting, and it was and is sort of an ongoing evolving application of basically one thing at a time, one condition at a time. First it was blood lead because it's really easy, it's one line code, anybody can do it, and then we moved into HIV and STDs and tuberculosis, and currently our last major program area was infectious diseases that we onboarded. We've received over 2.5 million reports electronically in either HL7231 or CSV, and we have made the CSV exception for certain laboratories such as adult and childhood lead. There are a lot of small labs that do not have the capability to do HL7, but most anybody can build a CSV file. And one of our primary providers of blood lead reports is the Philadelphia City Department of Health, which, much like New York City, is its own little empire of data collection and data sharing. So we have some unique relationships with them. But using the CSV allows them to send us data that they otherwise could not have sent us, and it is a very high volume. And HIV/AIDS was the second program area that we onboarded into ELR, and we extended the CSV format also for HIV. So we do still offer and accept messages in either format. We do support and require LOINC and SNOMED codes. SNOMED codes really only come in to play when you're talking about the infectious disease areas, but we do force people, I would say, to use the LOINCs and SNOMEDs, although we do off the record say, if you have to hard code something, go ahead and do it, whatever your system requires you to do. And we do work with folks to help them onboard and go through our extensive onboarding process, which I can address as well. Our funding basically is through the ELC grant, and more of our operations and staff have been funded through that grant over the last couple years. Our development and support is basically provided by our PA NEDS team. Pennsylvania basically has, you would say, two components. We have the PA NEDS system that we refer to as our transactional system, which is where folks can log in through secure user credentials and do data entry directly into the NEDS database. So that's very effective for physicians, for small clinics, even a lot of hospitals do that have lower volumes. So that transactional team also supports the back end because they're managing the database for us. The data entry is based on a questionnaire type system, and that questionnaire, of course, is tied to the database, which is tied to the parsing logic where we break down our messages and have to populate that database. So we have a common development team there for that. Our ELR team is myself as the project manager. We have a business analyst that we added to the project back in March of this year. He's coming up to speed on pretty much everything. We basically threw him in as a tester to start learning the system as we were going through some major changes there. And also in the last year and a half, we also rolled out our consultant, which some of you may know for years was Deloitte. We took about a year and a half to make a conversion to state staff and taking on all those responsibilities for end-to-end management of the application. So our BA is learning a lot, sort of a crash course on everything. And we have one person that is a technical support. Essentially, she is a tester for the NEDS project overall, but she's also responsible for being the level 1, 2, and 3 basic help desk for anyone that's using the PA ELR application, because it does require installations on local computers or servers. We have an automated upload system that we can offer, and she does a wonderful job, you know, helping those folks out and actually speeding up some of the onboarding process, which I can show you some information later on that. We have recently received a initiative grant to basically rebuild our entire ELR workflow, and that is really centered around installing Rhapsody as our main information broker in that workflow. We've known for several years that we needed to rebuild this. We've go from a Microsoft, basically Windows web service on the front end, through many, many transformations of the data using a lot of different components. It's really now, looking back at as technology's evolved, it's a very overly complex system with too many moving parts. And if any one of those catches a cold, it's bad for everybody. So we're looking to build what we call our 2G project to streamline that workflow, use Rhapsody to, you know, every capability that it has, and actually be able to provide a better service not only to our clients who are our program areas, but to the folks on the reporting side as well. Our laboratory participation and recruitment, again, go first, because after New York you sound kind of weak. We have 23 laboratories that are currently reporting via PA ELR, and that represents over 700 reporting entities of all types if you talk about the data entry folks as well. And it's some 2,000 to 3,000 registered secure users of the system. And those laboratories include both our automated uploaders using an application we call PAWS, and it basically sits on your server, and it's just a fancy web service, watches a folder, and when anything hits that folder, it just picks it up and automatically drops it to the web service. 85% of our reports that come into PA NEDS do come via ELR. So even though we have a small number of people reporting electronically, we are capturing a vast majority of our data through the ELR system. And again, of course, then the 15% are coming from those labs and hospitals and clinics as data entry. And those are primarily low volume entities. We prioritize our labs based on the conditions they report and the volume of those reports. Our program areas are very integrated with us. We have very good relationships with those folks, and they will often suggest or beg us to work with certain folks to try to bring them on to ELR as soon as we possibly can, because they're getting hundreds, maybe, of paper reports a month. And somebody's got to do the data entry with those. And, of course, that's a big drain on staff time, as everyone's well aware. So initially, in the early years, we went after the laboratories, the Quest Labs, which we have five Quest Labs that are partners. LabCorp and Mayo Clinic are some of the larger providers. So we've gone after the big guys because of the volumes to offload their systems and ours. But there are still challenges even involved with those folks, as I'm sure everybody has come across. Not all the laboratories report all of their tests via ELR because of their capabilities and their systems. I'm sure you've come across that as well. Someone like a Quest Lab, they have Quest Pittsburgh, they have smaller units that do certain testing for certain conditions, and not all those systems are always integrated, or their overall system in the past has been unable to segregate HIV from lead, from STDs, from tuberculosis. So it's an all or nothing type effort. And that takes years in some cases, until either they upgrade their systems or that we would make changes on our system or on our end, basically saying using Rhapsody, where we could pick and choose what we want. They could send us everything and we'll just throw out what we have not validated for consumption. So that's something we run into very often, and that has definitely put folks on the back burner. And something you have to keep in mind is what your onboarding effort's going to really look like. JA made me make a big picture of this. This is just a snapshot of our ELR onboarding process and a lot of the stages that we go through sort of in that project management for each one of the entities. And I use the University of Pittsburgh's Medical Center as an example here. They have some 27 hospitals and clinics in Western Pennsylvania, and they're basically, they have a centralized data broker system where all those entities report into the center, and then they upload those reports to us. And you can see just the green boxes. It's really helpful to me. I developed this several years ago as a way just to keep track of who's where, because as you've probably also experienced, somebody's really anxious to get involved, and you talk to them every week for 2 months, and then they vanish. Or something happens, and you know, somebody retires, which happened at UPMC, and for 2 years you do nothing because they were the SME. They were everything about the data and the transmission of that data and the codes and everything. So things can hit a wall. So we use different colored blocks to track our progress, and it just helps us always keep the status on where everybody's at, and it makes a great little snapshot to send to the higher management when they're asking and inquiring about things, and for inserting into CDC applications and other things as well. The variability in messages in our vendor interfaces, some of the common systems that we see every day are Cerner, the MISIS or SunQuest, I'm not sure who they call themselves now. StarLIMS is used by our State Bureau of Laboratory, and they actually integrated with RAPSE as well to do basically batching and submitting the data to our ELR system. The custom systems that are out there, I'm sure you're aware, are a vast variety of things, from homegrown to smaller vendor applications. One thing that we did do that proved very beneficial several years ago was we worked closely with Cerner and SunQuest on certifying their systems as being Pennsylvania ELR compliant. And instead of having to work with all of their individual clients, we were able to pick one version of their software and go through the entire onboarding process with them, where they sent us test messages for each condition, and they knew exactly how they had to build that HL7. And I'm sure in turn they were then able to go out to the field and provide their services to different clients to bring them on. So that has been very helpful, and I would strongly suggest that if you can do that as a side project with any of the vendors, conduct that on the side as the certification process, because that can greatly speed up onboarding users of their products. Challenges. Basically, David's doing a great thing where he's got grant money to basically hand out to help folks. We've talked about that. We need to pursue that ourselves. The typical reaction I've gotten from some very large, not to be named hospitals, but very big hospital groups was, you give me the money, I'll buy the module, and then we'll talk. And we're talking $20,000 to $40,000 typically. But I've heard that many times, and from entities, you've got to think, like, you're telling me you don't have one guy you can stuck on this, you know, $20,000 out of multi-million dollar budgets. But it's been surprising. And it's just not a priority for a lot of folks. It just isn't. And this is even several years ago, and it continues to today. So biggest challenges really are those dollars for those modules, the subject matter experts. A lot of folks out there just don't have it. As I said, UPMC is an example. Dr. Gary Blank retired. He was a genius about the codes and testing and everything. He left. Everything stopped. They had to pick up all over again and go back to their vendor, actually, now to engage their vendors to help them get their epidemiology reporting going again. And existing system limitations. Sometimes it's just a system is too antiquated. And ideally, you know, there's not money there for them to upgrade that system, so you run into that as well. Our HL7 231, we do accept all conditions through HL7, as I mentioned earlier, the CSV, you know, you see there. Some of the issues and challenges with the 231 are receiving drug susceptibilities, both on the provider end and our own end to consume them. We do have things set up. We had to onboard our own Bureau of Laboratories, and that was about a 12-month process. And it was ugly, and they were making a switch away from legacy systems. The entire department, we were trying to move and retire a lot of legacy systems. We were supporting some 5 extra access database, typical systems or secure FTPs and all this. We were trying to move everybody into ELR. And so getting BOL on board was a huge breakthrough to allow us to do everything else. But drug susceptibility is always a challenge. I see a few people nodding out there. We managed to do it, but it was pretty crafty in getting that done. The segregation of the message is by the condition, primarily on the provider side. As we're working more to integrate Rhapsody, we're going to have a lot more flexibility, of course, there. And we can intake messages and SNOMED code use. Don't know how many of you folks out there require SNOMED, but as I said earlier, we do for everything that's in the EPI condition group. And a lot of laboratories do not use SNOMEDs and will not use SNOMEDs. And we say then, okay, we're done here. Until you can use them, there's not much we can do. And we do participate with some local entities doing what we call local code mapping in our system. It's a pretty extensive process just by the way our system evolved. So we can do that for some SNOMEDs. If you're going to send me a group of two or three dozen, that's one thing. But if you're talking about local code mapping for 42,000 SNOMEDs, we've got a problem. You know, we just can't possibly do that and support that. And we do have an interface in NEDS where our users can go in and they can actually do their own code mapping and map stuff to staging tables and let us know. We validate it, and then it's a very easy promotional process to get that to production. But a lot of folks, of course, they don't have the time and staff always either to do that. And the CSV, as I highlighted earlier, is great for blood lead in HIV. It's a small set of link codes, very simple. A lot of folks can do that, and it's great for the low-tech reporters, the folks out there that really want to do something electronically. If you want to bump up those numbers of the people reporting via ELR, CSV is a great way to go. If you can develop the parsers and insert wraps, and you can do whatever you want really quickly with that. In an afternoon, you can onboard somebody probably. Our data code and variability, as I just mentioned, the local codes, huge variations there. The inconsistent terminology drives you nuts. I rely on sending people to FinVADs a lot anymore once I figure out how to use FinVADs sort of effectively. I'll go in there, I'll look up stuff, I'll take screenshots, slap it in an email, send it to folks, say, hey, here's 27 potential codes, knock yourself out, pick one, I don't care. And I make sure we've got them in the database, of course. The farming out by the large labs to smaller labs and the loss of demographic information. A Quest lab does this when the big influenza pandemic came along in the past. They were farming stuff out to a lab in Arizona from Philadelphia. And stuff was coming in and failing miserably because there were no demographics to the data. And we experienced that every so often. It's like, okay, you know, what happened to your Lyme tests? They just blew up suddenly. We started sending those out. So there's a lot of hand-holding and circling back and trying to chase that demographic information. Local codes, great for blood lead. Okay, no problem because it's an easy one. And no way for the EPIs or the cooties, as I like to refer to them. It's just easier than having to think of one of those big names. Just refer to them all as cooties. The standardized codes, again, the LOINC, because they're test-specific, it can be a challenge to get the labs to use the proper code. They'll just pick one. It's got the word, you know, whatever in it. Cootie A is in there. See, it's just easier to say cootie. Couldn't think of anything else. Sometimes it's a challenge, so we have to guide them back, or our EPI folks will come back and say, you know, really they should be using this one because they're meaning, you know, version F, which is the third cousin twice married of that one. So, you know, you try and give them the right code. And people in the field, I'm sure you may experience that, they freak out because they see something and it's like, oh my God, they've got this. And it's like, well, no, actually, they just had rhinovirus and they just used the wrong code. ICD-9s and 10 are in our database, but we do not accept them, which maybe doesn't make a lot of sense, but we've got them in the code tables, but we don't support the acceptance of those right now. And HL7 versions, that's always a challenge. 231 is our current standard. Meaningful use really throws a wrench into that with the 251. So we're working right now on developing the code mappings of what 251 is, but what we can consume, because we don't actually use all of 231. We're very selective there. So there's some of that gap analysis going on. And we have a business analyst on our team that's actually doing a great job of doing all that crosswalk mapping for us so that we can implement that in Rhapsody shortly. Our translation tool, of course, Rhapsody, because you can just do just about anything with it, which is great. and our PA ELR requirements. Gone over this several times. It's just kind of don't need to reread all of those, except for the last two bullets. The rigorous onboarding process. I'd prefer to have a big stick because it makes a much bigger impression. Conform and assimilate. You know, there's good stuff about that because you get people on standardized codes, but you have to survive the process of getting them onto those standardized codes. Sometimes from the CSTE conference I attended back in June, and some folks were, you know, talking, and Janet, actually from Florida, who I don't see in here this morning, I think she's busy somewhere else, talked to her afterwards, and it's like, is it me, or, do you guys just take anything, like some people in the lab says, but New York will just take anything I send them. I can send them a database file. They don't care. And I said, I know, but we're not New York. I'm sorry. It's like, you make things so difficult. I know. And it's a Quest lab in Erie. They love David. Kathleen's great, but we just don't talk technical specifications. So I think, depending on where you folks are, because I'm sure we got everybody from A to Z in the evolutionary process here, it's just really kind of where you got to start. What are we going to require, and how strict are we going to be, and how is it going to hurt us later? Is it going to slow down your onboarding process with laboratories? The end goal is maybe going to be worth it, but it's the pain and time that goes on, you know, in between there. So that's just something you've got to take a look at. And apparently that's my last slide. So I could go on and on and on, but I don't need to do that. If there are any questions, I'll ask you all to speak up. I've had too many Saturdays chasing ducks and geese, so sometimes I'm not so good on picking up a comment.